is Pettaway versus Barber. And we'll hear first from Mr. Sykes.
May it please the court, I'm Griffin Sykes. Together with my co-counsel, Chip Nix, we represent Walter Pettaway. He is the brother and the administrator of the estate of his late brother, Joseph Lee Pettaway. Joseph Lee Pettaway died of exsanguination, loss of blood from a dog bite. The district court entered a summary judgment on our Monell claim, and that's is the appeal taken today. The Monell claim that we filed is based on a written city policy, written directive 3.3.5, which prohibited Montgomery police from providing any first aid, medical care of any sort to persons that they injure.
They can provide aid for some instances, but not if the aid requires the expertise of someone trained, like a medic. That's what that policy provides, right? I mean, I've got the policy right in front of me.
What it says is that unless the police officer had training in the particular type of injury treatment that was required, so then he was prohibited from providing any aid.
So they can do certain things like CPR, this is completely different. The injury that your client sustained here is completely different. It requires the expertise of a medic.
No, sir. The testimony from our expert was that the training, the definition, everything you need to know about what was required to prevent his death is apply steady pressure to the wound. Dr. Amalu, our expert witness, testified that to a reasonable degree of medical certainty, had that been done, and again, that requires no training. It's five words.
Did some of the officers testify that they were aware that they could have just applied pressure, that you could apply pressure to a bleeding wound?
I'm not aware, but I won't tell you point blank they didn't, but I don't know.
Officer Watts testify to something of that nature?
I don't know, but I don't know what relevance that would have to the claim against the city, which prohibited him from applying.
Well, I guess the reason I'm asking is because if it's obvious that all that was required was to apply pressure, and it doesn't really take any special medical training to do that, and the officers knew that they had to apply pressure in order to prevent him from bleeding out because they also knew that the risk of bleeding out was immediate and would happen before the EMTs got there. Aren't those things that we have to consider whether the city was aware of?
I think the city was aware of these things.
Right. So don't, in our analysis, do we have to consider that they were aware of that?
Are you talking about the police individually?
The city.
The city of Montgomery.
Is it relevant that the city, let me ask it to you this way. Yeah. Is there evidence in the record that the city knew that some of the law enforcement techniques that it would use or that its officers would use would cause individuals or could cause individuals to bleed out?
No, ma'am, I don't think so, if I understand your question correctly.
Is there any evidence in the record that Officer Barber, who was there, or any of the officers on the scene were trained and qualified to render medical aid to an injured suspect that they have apprehended? Is there any evidence in that record that they were trained to do that?
I believe that all of the officers there, maybe I'm mistaken, but there were a number of the officers that were trained in CPR. But this
not was, for this.
No, sir. Not for blood loss. And all of them testified unequivocally that they understood this city policy 3.3.5 with the written directive. They understood that it prohibited them from attempting to provide any type of care to this man who was lying on the in front of them.
So they did what the policy called for them to do.
They did.
Which was to call EMT.
Well, the policy doesn't say call EMTs. It just says it prohibits them from providing medical care or any type of first aid to a person they injure.
Did Chief Finley, was it Chief Finley who instituted the policy?
Yes.
All right. Now, did Chief Finley testify that he would not disagree that a person could die in 3 to 5 minutes from unchecked bleeding from a major artery?
That is exactly his testimony.
All right. And did the city's Rule 30B6 representative, Lieutenant Andre Carlisle, testify that the loss of blood from a major artery can cause death in a matter of seconds if no efforts are made to stop or retard the bleeding?
He did.
All right.
Yes.
And so the city was aware that these kinds of injuries could occur if its officers use certain types of force. Isn't that right?
Not only that they could occur, but they had occurred, they would occur. It was reasonably predictable that police are going to use force. And the chief testified that there's a broad range of different types. Some are very minor, some are more serious, some are life-threatening. And that
was there evidence that bleed outs could occur and did occur in less time than EMTs could possibly arrive on the scene?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. And did Officer Watts, who was on the scene, agree that if nothing is done to stop heavy bleeding, the person is in danger of dying?
Yes.
And did she also concede that most people of average intelligence know that?
I don't know whether she did. I think that's obvious. Most everybody that I've ever come in contact, adult, has understood that if you are seeing somebody who is gushing blood, that is something that has to be addressed immediately. And
even if you're not trained to address an injury like that?
Well, that's the problem. They weren't trained. They could have been trained, and by training, they could have been. The training could have been a 2-hour tutorial on putting your hand on a wound or taking a T-shirt and pressing it down some soft absorbent material. The bleed outs occur are going to occur if that isn't done, and it is the most simple and basic kind of first aid to provide that kind of, if you want to call it medical care or first aid.
Well, was there testimony in this case that the reason that nobody tried to stop the bleeding was because of the policy?
Yes, ma'am. All of the police officers testified that. I took the depositions of the four police officers.
Not because they didn't know how to do it.
That's right. Exactly. They testified that the reason they didn't was they knew of written directives 3.3.5, and they knew and understood from it that they were prohibited, and that was the word that was used. They were prohibited from taking any step to try to stem the bleeding.
So the policy should provide that officers should be trained to be medics in addition to officers, too.
No, sir. I don't think you have to go to the extent of medic training in order to be able to stop or seriously retard bleeding. Again, our expert witness testified.
If you're not trained, you can do more damage than the injury that has been sustained.
As a general principle, I would agree, but with regard to this particular type of injury, No, I don't understand how a poor attempt to apply pressure to the wound is going to make it any worse. It may not. If you do it poorly, you may not retard the loss of as much blood as you would like, but it's not going to make anything worse. An aborted or deficient attempt to apply pressure is not going to make anything worse.
Yeah, I think we understand your argument.
All right, so with regard to the district court judge's grant of summary judgment, it is based on repeated misstatements of law. I had prepared a blow-up, and I'm told that I needed to, I have it out in the hallway, excerpts from 2 pages of the district court's order, 2 pages from a case Barnett versus MacArthur, and 2 pages from a case Rogers versus Sheriff of Santa Rosa County. Now, I will bring the blow-ups in if Your Honor likes, or if not, I have got print copies of those 6 pages that I can provide to the court.
Have you provided it previously to opposing counsel?
I have a copy for
that. That's the reason why we have it, so there are no surprises. Okay. So we're going to ask that you not do that.
The blow-ups you're speaking of?
Right.
Well, this is in the record. These are 2 pages from two of the court's opinions that we cited, and they cited in the brief, and 2 pages from the district court's order.
But go ahead and you can make your argument to us about it. Right. We're happy to hear the argument.
All right. That argument is that the district court incorrectly held.
Your argument is that the court applied the wrong legal standard, because the court said that there had to be a constitutional violation by the officer first. And we said, I think it was in Barnett versus MacArthur, that you don't need that. Is that your argument?
That is one of the arguments, yes, that certainly. That is the nexus, the that's one of the ways that, again,
is that your strongest argument?
Well, the district court also held, because Barber did not violate Petaway's 14th Amendment right to medical care, neither did the city of Montgomery.
Mm-hmm.
As such, Petaway hadn't established a constitutional violation. Well, again, it is not necessary under Barnett and under Rogers. Both of those cases say that you cannot hold specifically that a individual policeman's violation of the Constitution is not required to show a Monell claim. The city can violate the constitutional provision without an individual police officer having done so.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Sykes. You've reserved 3 minutes. We'll hear from Ms. Ingram.
May it please the court, my name is Allison Ingram, along with my co-counsel Winston Sheehan and Graham Neely. We represent the city of Montgomery. This case presents the issue of whether law enforcement officers satisfy their 14th Amendment duty to provide prompt medical care to those injured during the course of police pursuit when they promptly call for emergency medical services.
But it doesn't really. I mean, we're talking about, this is about whether the city's policy prevented the officers from providing care that they otherwise could have provided. I mean, isn't that really what it's about?
Well, the policy, I mean, when you read the policy, it says that appropriate medical care is to be provided and includes the following. There is a limitation that the appropriate...
Could they have applied direct pressure under the policy?
If they were trained to do so.
Okay, and so that's exactly the point, right? The argument is that because they were prohibited from applying direct pressure, that no direct pressure was applied, and that no direct pressure was applied even though, and that this policy was adopted knowing that there would be instances of bleed outs even though the officers also knew that the EMTs would arrive too late to be able to do anything about the bleed outs?
I think that the testimony is that in general, there is knowledge that suspects can be injured. But when I think it comes to specifically there being bleed outs, including especially a case like this, a bleed out of a femoral artery, I don't think there's any testimony that that was anticipated.
So let me ask you a question. Let's say, God forbid, that an officer had this injury and another officer who was present was not trained in providing medical treatment, but knew that the EMTs would arrive too late to save the officer's life. Would the policy directive prevent that officer from applying direct pressure to stop his fellow officer from bleeding out?
I don't think so, because the policy wouldn't apply to a fellow officer.
Right. Yes, I understand. Okay. Why is that?
Because, I mean, I think obviously there's several different reasons. One are potential liability reasons against the officers, I think.
Well, isn't it because you wouldn't want to have to worry, you would know that the officer would bleed out if direct pressure were not applied, and so you wouldn't want to prevent that officer from being able to be saved, right? I mean, that's the reason.
And I agree. I mean, I think...
Right. So why isn't that exactly the same problem when it comes to a person who's not an officer?
Because I think the status of the people is important.
Why?
Because I think that there are, as I was beginning to mention, I think there are potential liabilities that can occur when someone who's not trained does something that could potentially hurt another person.
Like moving a person from one location to a different location?
Yes.
Okay, well, that's what your officers did. They moved him. In fact, they carried him out from the room in which he was bitten to the front of the house and laid him on the sidewalk there, right? The little...
And it's my understanding they did that because they did not believe the EMTs would be able to get back into that room with their board.
So let me ask you a question. Is it your position that if the officer has not received any sort of training whatsoever, the only thing they can do, I think, according to the policy, is to call the medics. Is that correct?
Well, the policy says that appropriate medical aid may include but not be limited to increased observation, evaluation by paramedics, flushing chemical agents.
Part C, which talks about medical aid, which includes all of that, right, has the caveat that it's only to be rendered by those trained and or certified to render such aid. So, for instance, if the officers had somebody in their custody and the person was choking, but they weren't trained or certified to render CPR, would it be your position the only thing they could do in that instance is call the police, is to call the medics?
The phrase training includes training not just provided by MPD, but also training that they would have received going through the police academy. And it is true that officers receive basic first aid training in the police academy. Now, staunching blood was not part of the police academy training prior to 2021. It has been added as part of it now so that all officers do receive that training. But at the time of this incident, it was not part of the first aid training that the Alabama Peace Officers Training Academy provided.
But they would have had to receive specific training in order to comply with the policy, correct?
Yes. And again, I mean, I think it goes to if you don't have training, you can injure someone.
But here's what I think is the problem. The problem is that the policy was adopted knowing, A, that people would bleed out, that would happen from time to time because of police operations, that the immediacy or the urgency of a bleed out type of injury was such that if nothing was done before the EMTs got there, that the person would die, and that the EMTs would likely get there after the person would bleed out. That seems problematic to me. It seems like it prohibits your officers from complying with their constitutional duty to provide proper care at the appropriate time. It's not like there's specialized medical training that's needed to apply direct pressure. I mean, your officers admitted that one of your officers said it's a femoral artery, and the other one said he's bleeding out on the scene while this was happening. And they all stood around and didn't do anything and testified that they didn't do anything because your policy prohibited them from doing anything. That seems like a problem under their constitutional obligation when they knew that he was going to die, when they knew what to do in order to try to stop it, and when they didn't do it simply because of the policy. Why is that not the case?
Well, Your Honor, I think that your position is assuming that there is a constitutional duty for officers to personally render medical care.
No. There is a constant... They cannot be prohibited from providing proper medical care if they can do so. If your officers knew how to do so, and they're all saying it's pretty basic knowledge here that a person of average intelligence knows that if you don't stop the bleeding, the person will bleed out, and they're prohibited from doing so, and that's the only reason that they don't do it, that seems like a problem for you.
Well, and I think that when you look at what happened initially after the bite, I don't think that anyone realized that it was a serious injury. Even the ENT...
Let me tell you what your officer said. One of them said, he's good. And the other officer said, yeah, good is a relevant term. He meant it's a relative term. And then he said, he's alive. And one of them said, it's a femoral artery. Another one said, he's bleeding out. So I don't think that they thought that he was okay. If I'm misunderstanding the record, please let me know.
Well, I think that in the initial probably 5 minutes after the bite, I don't think that anyone recognized that it was a serious condition. Dog bites typically do not create...
Well, I watched the video, and that's what they're saying during the video in those 5 minutes.
The first 5 minutes afterwards. And I think that once they moved him, I think the amount of blood did become apparent. I think it did. I do think, though, that just if you look at what the Supreme Court has said in Revere, that they satisfied their duty when they called for emergency medical...
That's not what the Supreme Court... That is taking that completely out of context.
And so far, there's nothing in the 11th Circuit that has addressed it. All of the cases that have come from the 11th Circuit have been addressed to the timeliness of calling for...
Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because this is a Monell policy. It's not... So whether it was clearly established or not is not relevant here.
Well, and I think that there are some public policy reasons for not requiring the police to immediately or personally render medical care. They're trained as police officers. They're not trained as medics. I know that you say this is applying pressure, but
they're trained as police officers, and the city is equipping them with canines, with weapons that can cause serious injuries, even death. And is your position that there's a policy reason why the city shouldn't train them to respond appropriately to the force that they're using?
Well, I think that policing duties are about, when there's an instance like this, where there's a suspect, where there's an arrest, where there's been some kind of situation like this, that they've got to, be aware of securing a scene. In this case, we now know with the benefit of hindsight that other people did not come up, but you want the officers to be watchful, especially in cases where there's a gunshot of other people that are coming up, rather than being distracted by providing medical care.
Well, there were 7 officers there. They were standing around holding flashlights on top of Mr. Petaway. I think they had enough people to watch for other people coming up.
In this case, I agree, Your Honor, but I'm just saying as a general and broad principle to require that, that is one of the concerns. There's also the risk of bloodborne exposure. There was a lot of blood in this case. I think testimony by the officers was, I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know what was happening. They did not have personal protective equipment, PPE, which when you think when there's a lot of blood going on, you think...
But we're not talking about a situation where the police might need some discretion in terms of what to respond to. We're talking about a policy that specifically prohibits them from providing aid. To me, that's different from the sorts of situations that you're talking about.
But I think the point being that if you're going to create a rule that says officers should provide care, especially in a case where there's a
lot of... That's different. That's a completely different issue. The issue is whether you can say officers are prohibited from providing any kind of medical assistance other than whatever it is. I'm not sure what, but certainly not direct pressure. They're prohibited from doing that. When you know that they're going to be using the type of force that is going to, at least at some point, require some type of immediate response in order to save a person's life, that is not going to come with EMTs because they physically can't get there in time.
But I think in this case, there's no history that a dog bite had ever caused an injury like this. It was just unexpected. It was not anything that anyone anticipated would possibly happen in this case. So I think, you know, that other public policy reasons exist because if you get distracted or even do something like that, there's been a recent case where an officer attended to someone who had a gunshot wound, a Minneapolis police officer. And when he approached the suspect to give him aid, the suspect turned on him and shot him and killed him. And so I just think that when you take police officers out of policing responsibilities and provide an affirmative duty on their part to personally render medical aid...
That is not this case. This case is not about whether the officers were affirmatively required to render aid. That is not what this case is about. This case is about whether the city can prohibit the officers from providing aid if they know how to do so and want to do so. And the answer here is what we have to find.
And I think that they are permitted to provide first aid if they have been trained, and they would have been trained to provide some sort of first aid at the police academy.
I want to, if I could, turn to a different question. I'm looking at the last page of the order, the basis for the district court's decision. And the district court says, and I'm going to read it, it says, because Barber, which is the officer on the scene, did not violate Pettaway's 14th Amendment right to medical aid, neither did Montgomery. As such, Pettaway has not established the first requirement of a Monell claim that a constitutional violation occurred. Thus, there's no need to inquire into Montgomery's policies or customs. That seems to be inconsistent with our prior decision in Barnett versus MacArthur, where we said that an underlying constitutional violation by the officer on the scene is not a prerequisite to a Monell claim against the city. How do you reconcile that?
I agree with that, and that is a point that my opposing counsel brought up in a motion for reconsideration. The district court issued a subsequent order, and I think, you know, in the end, it just comes down to whether or not this court finds that there is a constitutional violation as part of the first step.
The court corrected itself later?
Yes, in a subsequent opinion in his motion for reconsideration.
Okay.
Your Honor, just in conclusion, we would ask that this court affirm the opinion of the district court.
All right. Thank you very much, Ms. Ingram. Mr. Sykes, you've reserved 3 minutes.
Your Honor, I don't have a lot to say. I think, Your Honor, the court has a very good grasp on what this case is about and what it isn't about. There's one point that I would like to address with regard to argument of opposing counsel. And it sounded to me like she was intimating that the police weren't aware of his injury. Your Honors have seen the video. His whole front was soaked in blood. And this is in addition to the comments that Your Honor noted one or more of the officers, made on the video with regard to indicating their awareness that this guy is about to bleed out. They certainly knew that. The idea that they didn't or were not aware of it, respectfully, that's nonsense. The blood was, as he lay there on the sidewalk, blood was pooling underneath him. I don't know what more, how much more aware you could be of the peril that this guy was in, this guy, Mr. Pettaway, Joseph Lee Pettaway, was in, if that's happening right in front of you. The public policy reasons, I really am...
To
understand the
was there an effort to settle this case, to settle this claim against the city?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Okay.
There was a prior case, Your Honor, may be aware of the prior case that was a claim in this lawsuit.
Who settled with Officer Barber?
Yeah, for that was. Totally different in the...
I'm asking about the claim, the Monell claim.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. There was an effort. Well, we've made an effort. We haven't gotten very far with that.
Okay.
We are... I don't know if I'm...
Okay.
There's been an offer to try to mediate the case.
All right. You've answered my question.
Yes, sir. The public policy argument, most police officers have, I think, some sort of motto or logo or that we are here to serve and protect. Well, protect includes not only persons who might be injured by criminal activity, but also we think that under the U.S. Supreme Court opinion... opinions that duty encompasses to protect persons that we injure while we are enforcing the law, and that there's some public policy reason that overrides that is not comprehensible to me.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Sykes. I think we've got your argument.
Thank you.
Our next case is Wharf Retail.